You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
This week saw the release of another major IPCC climate report, stating that without immediate action, we will reach a 1.5 degree rise in climate and beyond by 2030. Several new contributors to climate change were highlighted, including the cumulative impact of big cities and towns on the climate. Efforts to turn our major cities more green have been taking place across Aotearoa for several months, so I spoke to Crystal Olin from Sustainable Cities Aotearoa about what is being done and what needs to come next. I started off by asking her about the impacts that urban areas currently have on the environment.
So one of the things I was pleased to learn about the latest climate change report was that there's a pretty big emphasis on the social science side of things, about how we design and build and live in our cities and our towns and our suburbs actually matters a lot, that it's not just technology that will save us, although technology is very important, but actually those patterns of how we live and, the ability of governments and larger organizations that influence cities and how cities are shaped to actually curb the demand for energy consumption and carbon emissions in the way that cities are designed, and so therefore the way that people go about living their lives in those cities.
Do you think that the recent changes that have been made to city centres around New Zealand have been made with sustainability in mind?
Certainly in my experience, but it's complicated. Certainly at Wellington City Council, sustainability was a huge driver in what we tried to do, but change is difficult and change is complicated, and it's really difficult and slow to change the ways in which people are used to living and going about their everyday lives. So introducing a cycleway, for example, might seem like a relatively straightforward and simple concept, but it can be, in my experience, extremely contested with a lot of, there's a fear of losing car parks, there's a fear of retailers losing business, when in reality the evidence base shows, the data from research shows the opposite, that people frequent, shop and enjoy the vibrancy of a streetscape much more when they can walk and cycle as opposed to when they're driving in their car and reliant on cycling the block to find a park.
In general, does the design of cities really have a major impact on sustainability?
Yeah, it really does. And it's really nice to see this shift toward understanding that cities have such an impact in the way that we live. And when I say cities, I don't mean big metropolitan areas necessarily. I also mean smaller cities and towns. So, Dunedin and New Plymouth and, a place like Gore. any settlement, any human settlement has an impact on sustainability. And cities aren't isolated in and of themselves. They're interconnected with the wider regions of which they're a part. So the natural areas and the rural and farming areas as well. The buildings that we build are using materials and resources, lasting a long time. But more often than not, the buildings we build are built with a 20-year mindset rather than a much longer-term mindset. But more than that, the way that we lay out our cities and our blocks and our infrastructure, that lasts even longer than buildings. So, the streets and the patterns with which we move around a city, are set when we lay out that city or that town. And it's very difficult to change those patterns once they're in place. They last for centuries, typically. And it's quite a big effort and pretty rare to be able to overhaul those patterns once they're already in place.
Do you think that transforming cities into these kinds, to the best of our ability, to places where public transport and walking and cycling are the biggest priority over cars, is going to have a major impact in terms of the cost to transform those cities to that sort of system?
Yeah, I think it's probably the biggest thing we can do, or one of the biggest things we can do. I think it's hugely important that we shift to more sustainable and active modes of transport, and it's certainly worth the investment. It is it is a difficult and slow process. I think people are comfortable in their cars, and as long as they're comfortable in their cars and the alternatives are less comfortable, less efficient, you know, not cheap enough, you know, people will continue to choose the easiest, most convenient, most enjoyable option, which a lot of times tends to be the car. I think, you know, New Zealand's doing a few things wrong at the moment, you know, dismantling its railways, you know, getting the recent announcement that the Northern Explorer line between Wellington and Auckland being suspended is, you know, is sad. I think that's a big mistake. You know, the bus systems here need to do better. You know, why don't we have smaller buses that run more frequently and that are on time? You know, when I miss a bus, then I also miss the train. So what's a 20-minute commute in the car becomes an hour and a half commute via walking and bus and train with, you know, a good half of that time spent just waiting because the system is ineffective. You know, cities are trying to discourage car use, for example, in Wellington. And Dunedin was trying to do it too back when I was involved, and they probably still are. So, yeah, it's a huge shift, but it's an important one, and it needs to be made a lot more quickly than it's being made.
What do you think that people living in urban areas will need to give up in order to reach the benchmark of staying underneath 1.5 degrees Celsius and our climate increases?
I'm not sure that framing it in that way is the most helpful, because, you know, it's a tough climate out there. It's hard to afford a place to rent or a place to buy for a lot of people right now. A lot of people are just trying to make ends meet. And so the thought of giving up something on top of, you know, just trying to kind of survive in a really expensive place to live at the moment is probably not something that's going to motivate people. But I think if you can frame it in a way where people can benefit alongside the environment benefiting, that, you know, really, quite a lot to be gained from that. You know, you might be giving up carbon emissions, but you would also be gaining a healthier lifestyle, and hopefully a more enjoyable lifestyle. That's, you know, I think there can be a lot of shaming put on people and you know, being on the consumer side of things. But actually it's the government and it's the larger institutions that need to put the systems in place to support people living those healthier lifestyles and having those choices actually be real choices. You know, it's one thing to tell people to walk and cycle and give up the car, but if it means that they're going to give up 3 hours of their day commuting as opposed to 40 minutes a day commuting, they may not actually be able to do that if they're trying to juggle getting, you know, kids where they need to be or putting food on the table. You know, so we really need to get it right from a systems point of view at that higher level, is be mindful about their choices and, you know, try to do the right thing, try to recycle, try to, you know, try to make the right choices in terms of what they buy and they eat and how they you know, how they deal with their waste and how they choose their transport options. But they also can advocate for, you know, for New Zealand doing better, you know, for actually giving them viable alternatives that are truly viable and more sustainable, that they're not just ideals on paper, but they're actually, you know, something that can work into the everyday lives of people. And I know there are efforts underway to do this. You know, for example, I know Kāinga Ora is really making